Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Thanks for tuning in, because today we're talking about the invasive reptiles that are taking over Florida. They're brought in as pets. The Burmese python and the Nile monitor lizard are eating their way through Florida's endangered species. And now, more exotic reptiles may join them. There is a word, Repticon. Remember that, because a Repticon is a weekend-long extravaganza that's similar to a baseball card convention. Except, instead of mint-conditioned Mickey Mantles and Pete Roses, there are green anacondas and meat-eating lizards. You may see a guy strolling around wearing a T-shirt that says, "Snakes' Lives Matter." Or someone else with a 3-foot-long lizard strung across their chest like a bandolier. Roughly 60 Repticons take place each year from Phoenix to Oklahoma City to Baltimore, and they attract an estimated 200,000 visitors. These shows represent but a tiny sliver of the live reptile trade. In much of the continental United States, these cold-blooded creatures aren't likely to fare well outdoors should they escape or be set free, but the subtropics of South Florida are different. And the best adapted have not only survived in the wild, they have thrived. To date, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, or the FWC, has identified 50 types of non-native lizards, turtles, crocodilians, and snakes within state limits. This is more than anywhere else in the world. For the birds of Florida, this blitz of exotic predators poses an existential scale threat. The Burmese pythons, which stalk wading birds in the Everglades, have become so menacing that the state has hosted derby-style competitions to catch them. Farther north, Nile monitors, the largest lizards in Africa, have been terrorizing a population of burrowing owls in the city of Cape Coral. And on the outskirts of Florida City, just outside the Everglades National Park, egg-eating Argentine tegus could soon raid the nesting grounds of one of the last remaining populations of the endangered Cape Sable seaside sparrow. Each of these reptiles found its way to Florida via the pet trade. But while most people acknowledge that's a leaky pipeline, few agree on whether and how to plug it. Nile monitors have no business in this hemisphere. As their name implies, they should be basking along the shores of Africa's Nile Delta. But they got popular in the pet trade, and rumor has it that the owner of a now-defunct pet store, scheming and a source of free inventory, let some loose behind his shop so they would breed in the wild. These reptiles can top 7 feet. They can swim like Michael Phelps and eat rodents, birds, rabbits, wasp nests, venomous rattlesnakes, poisonous cane toads, and according to some residents, dogs. There's no telling how many Nile monitors are out there. Since 2000, the city has logged more than 2,500 sightings and trapped 564 of these animals. Over the years, though, no one has uncovered a monitor nest. This is an unsettling tidbit, given that the lizards can lay up to 60 eggs at a time. Conservative estimates put their population at 1,000. And this is a low-ball number, because many residents are so accustomed to the animals that they don't bother calling one in. Back again with Florida's invasive reptiles. Biological invasions aren't necessarily blitzkriegs. It doesn't matter if a pet store releases a few dozen lizards, or a hurricane damages a breeding facility, sets free hundreds of snakes, as has happened. Some of the invaders die off. Some are scooped up by predators, or they're simply unable to adjust to new environs. Others find food, find a mate, and survive. With each new egg that's fertilized and each animal that reaches sexual maturity, the monetary and ecological costs of the problem go up. Biologists call this the invasion curve. And right now, Nile monitors fall somewhere in the middle. Any hope of eradicating them in Florida faded long ago, but it may be possible to keep them contained to a few small pockets around the state. One is in Cape Coral. Another is in Palm Beach County, the site of President Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort. Keep following the invasion curve upward, past the point of containment, past the Nile monitor, all the way to the top, and you will find the Burmese python. This apex predator can grow more than 18 feet long, and was for a long time one of the most popular snakes in the pet trade. Now there are estimated tens or hundreds of thousands of Burmese pythons in South Florida, and they're eating everything. Rabbits, rats, bobcats, deer, alligators. On the invasion curve, they fall in the resource protection and long-term management section. In other words, they're taking over. And our only hope is to safeguard what they have not yet destroyed. In 2012, a team of researchers reported that marsh rabbits, raccoons, and opossums had all but vanished from the Everglades National Park. One of the culprits, they suggested, was the arrival of the Burmese python, which records show was established in the park around 2000. If that's the case, it took the snakes just a decade to eat their way through that section of the ecological menu. Now they may have shifted to wading birds for their next course. These include the federally threatened wood stork, magnificent frigate bird, the great blue heron, little blue heron, the red-whiskered bulbul, snowy egret, and the pie-billed grebe. To date, at least 39 different bird species have been found in the bellies of Florida's pythons. Tegus are bizarre-looking lizards with enormous jaw muscles that resemble jowls. They are omnivorous eating machines that have in the past decade rocketed up the invasion curve and are now so ubiquitous in this stretch of Florida that some grad students refer to it as Tegulandia. There are even tales of a local fast food joint that became renowned for tegus that burrowed under the drive-thru box and scared hell out of unsuspecting customers. In their native South America, tegus have a fondness for eggs. They raid caiman nests and eat tinamou, a ground-dwelling bird, but as we learn today, they seem equally enticed by store-bought chicken eggs. Yet for all the trouble they're causing and all the risks they pose, tegu sales are not regulated in Florida. Unlike the Nile monitor and Burmese python, FWC does not classify tegus as a conditional species. Just like Burmese pythons and Nile monitors, tegus got a toehold in South Florida through the pet trade, where they are beloved as docile, intelligent, and affectionate companions. The fight against them is now at an inflection point. We are out of the eradication part of the invasion curve, and we're heading up through containment, according to the University of Florida. The question is, are the efforts going to be enough? This information about the invasion of reptiles taking over Florida was provided by The Week magazine, November 16th. Are there intelligent beings elsewhere in the universe? Have you thought about that? Well, if you'd like to read a very good article about this entitled Signs, it's S-I-G-N-S, Signs, you want to look at Air and Space magazine, February-March of this year, 2019. The detection of intelligent beings elsewhere in the universe would, by almost any measure, top the list of most dramatic discoveries ever. Yet the search for advanced extraterrestrial life has drawn relatively few scientists and almost no funding. While NASA and other space agencies actively hunt for biosignatures beyond Earth, signs of simple microbial life, the little green men giggle factor has limited the seemingly more difficult search for evidence of civilizations residing, perhaps thriving, beyond our solar system. That quest has been left largely to the private sector. Most significantly, these days, to the SETI Institute, that's S-E-T-I, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, located in California. Recently, though, the field has been going through a period of soul-searching and even a name change, and has emerged with a certain amount of new respectability. Last September, at the request of Congress, NASA convened a group of scientists in Houston to assess progress and problems facing the search for techno-signatures, the signs of advanced extraterrestrials. Michael New, the agency's deputy associate administrator for research, even suggested that NASA may be willing to fund this work if congressional interest persists, despite having been mostly out of the SETI business for decades. Jason Wright, a professor of astronomy and astrophysics at Penn State University and chair of the Science Organizing Committee for the Houston Conference, said it could be a turning point for the field. He said, "I think the most useful part of our meeting was seeing genuine interest from NASA folks about supporting techno-signatures community. There has been no SETI conference this big and this good in a very long time." For most people, the term SETI refers to radio searches of the kind that have been underway, off and on, since the 1960s. Although dish antennas around the world have listened with ever more sophisticated instruments for some kind of pattern that suggests an intelligent origin, so far no one has heard anything beyond the natural radio noise that is produced by galaxies, stars, and planets. Given the needle-in-a-haystack nature of the problem, this silence is hardly surprising. The radio search operates in nine dimensions. If you consider all the parameters from spatial coordinates to time to polarization of the signal, and so far the total search space covered is equivalent to a small swimming pool compared to all the Earth's oceans. While traditional SETI continues to improve and expand, attendees at the October conference also discussed other options besides radio searches, and talks ranged from how industrial pollutants discovered in an exoplanet's atmosphere could be a strong signal of advanced life to the recent discovery of unusual astronomical objects that defy easy explanation. Among these oddballs is Oumuamua, which is Hawaiian for scout, which in 2017 became the first object which is known to enter the solar system from interstellar space. First, it was thought to be a comet, but closer examination showed that it lacked the icy cloud of gas and dust that is characteristic of comets. Astronomers then reclassified it as an asteroid, although that also had to be revised when analysis of the object's orbital motion showed that something other than simple gravitation might be at work. Is it spewing small amounts of gas, after all? Well, long, shiny, unusually thin for a space rock, Oumuamua could conceivably be a probe or other type of artifact from another solar system. According to at least one team of researchers, one possibility is that Oumuamua is a what they call a light sail floating in interstellar space as debris from advanced technological equipment. That all sounds extremely eerie, doesn't it? Well, we'll see more about this at a later time. And now back to Earth and the pole's mythical status. Various monarchs funded explorations to the North Pole, mainly in search of a sea route connecting the Atlantic and the Pacific. But they were also enchanted by the pole's mythical significance. As early as 3000 BC, the Egyptians, Arabs, and Greeks believed the heavens revolved around Earth's northernmost point, located directly under a star that the Greeks called Polaris. The first documented Arctic explorer, the Greek geographer Pytheas, voyaged north in 320 BC and reported seeing huge white bears on a sea of ice, confirming the legend that regions under Polaris were guarded by celestial bears called Arctos, thus the name Arctic for the area. In 1578, Queen Elizabeth I of England assigned a scholar to make the case for Britain's claim to the North Pole. And by the 18th and 19th centuries, governments were offering substantial prizes for explorers who made it to the farthest north point. It became a matter of national and personal pride for explorers to reach the top of the world, and years of failure only heightened what was called North Pole fever. A few items that are worthy of note. Despite the booming economy that we have right now, 45% of Americans do not have enough savings to cover 3 months of expenses. 30% have more debt than they can manage, and 16% have delayed medical care because of cost. This, according to the Nonprofit Center for Financial Services Innovation. The Air Force has spent $327,000 since 2016 to keep replacing coffee mugs that can reheat fluids on planes in flight. The mugs, which cost $1,280 each, break very easily when dropped. You have to think about that. And white supremacists and other members of far-right movements were responsible for 71% of extremist-related deaths in the United States between 2008 and 2017. Islamic extremists were responsible for 26%. The number of terrorist incidents in the U.S. has tripled since 2013, with most of them being driven by anti-Muslim anti-Semitic, anti-government, or racist ideologies. Over the past 20 years, there have been more than a dozen local and state elections in the United States that either were decided by a single vote or ended in a tie. And that's going to bring us to the end of today's program. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate your company. I want you to take care of yourself and be careful on trips. I know I am. Goodbye for today.